Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Hell of a half hour coming up. We very sports heavy. About 2:20, 2:30, we're going to have Russ Brandon, who is the president and CEO of the UFL. Going to have head coach Anthony Becht. Going to have Daryl Moose Johnston, who I'm super excited to meet him and talk to him. Right now, we have our very own Benji Molina. Has something cool coming up. Wheels, take it over.
Yeah, Benji, good to have you, buddy. Good to talk to you again. I know you got a cool event coming up on April 10th, so we'll talk some Cardinals and spring training stuff in a second, but tell me about baseball in the classroom. I know it's a cool opportunity for you and Polo to deal with some of the kids in town, learn some of the Spanish terms that are used in baseball games, and just do a little fun and get out to a ball game at the same time.
I'll tell you. Hey, guys, first of all, thank you for having me on your show. It's always an honor, a pleasure to be here, man, talking baseball with you guys at any moment, at any time of day. This baseball in the classroom, it's actually a pretty cool thing, man. It's actually a lot of kids and a lot of adults will go out there too. They are so curious about how we do the games in Spanish, how we sound live. They have a lot of questions to ask you about what this mean. How do you say this? How do you say that? So it is a very fun. We make it fun. You know, me and Paul, we always try to make it fun for these kiddos and everybody. So it's really, really cool. It's real simple. It's cardinals.com/team. You get 15, just spending $15, $15. You get a hot dog, you get a chips, you get a drink, you get a ticket to the game, and you get to hang out with us, man. It's fun.
That by itself is fun, man. Even if we're not learning, I get a test, man. Hanging with Benji and Polo is a blast. Now, give me a couple of examples, because obviously I'm not Spanish speaking, but I picked up a lot. I went to college at Miami, so I started learning a lot of the baseball terms right away, and I was like, I don't know what that means. I like right away learned cambio. I knew right away as a catcher. People telling me cambio, I figure out that's a changeup. Okay, I know that's a change.
Yep.
Give me a couple of the common ones you want to teach the kids.
I mean, it's going around the diamond. It's basically what they want to know. How do you say dugout? We say banca. How do you say, like ball, bola? How do you say bat, bate? How do you say the bases, bases? Things like that is what they're more interested in. The strike for us is a strike universal. So it doesn't have a translation in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
But that's a strike. You know, you're actually speaking Spanish when you say strike, just so you know. So it's a bunch of things, man. It's a different things. And then they start asking you how we do the games. You know, how do we know what to say? And it's kind of interesting, the questions. So we tell them, it's like, that's our language. It's like, you guys in English, you know what to say.
Right.
And now for us in Spanish, we know how to do the games, and they actually sometimes ask us to do like a play by play kind of thing, yaddy hitting. Usually, that's what we get. But it's fun, man. I think you guys should get your tickets. It's going out. They're going out pretty fast. And you just hang out with us and have fun.
Good time. Yeah, the first three words I learned when I was down in school was cambio, pelota, and they called me feo. That means ugly.
Did you Google what that was?
Yeah. No, they explained it to me pretty fast. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Is that a cool nickname? They're like, no, it's not a good nickname.
Hey, that's an easy three-letter word right there.
All right, so it's cardinals.com/themes, baseball in the classroom, and $15. You can hang out with Benji and Polo, learn some about like the Spanish side of some of the terminology, but also just kind of the culture behind the game. And obviously the $15 gets you a ticket to the game. It includes a voucher for a jumbo hot dog, chips, and a soda. So this is for students, and obviously parents can come down on their own. April 10th is the game. I believe that's the Phillies, right? It's the game against the Phillies?
Yeah, the Phillies. The game is early. The game is at 12. Mm-hmm. We had a couple schools that were asking for tickets, you know, for that game. I mean, see, they can come over. St. Cecilia is very big on Spanglish, you know, okay. Like English and Spanish. Uh-huh. So I think a couple of schools around are trying to bring their kids over. I mean, it's a fun time, man. And Fredbird stopped by sometimes and hang out with us. But it's a cool thing. Think about it. I mean, you go out there, you have time to ask questions if you want. What do you want to know in Spanish? Translate it to English. You say guante, glove, and you keep going on and on. I mean, we have so many questions. This one is for you guys out there. It's not us. We're not out there to get, you know, our points up or anything like that. It's more for the kiddos, you know, like and anybody that wants to. And you know what the interesting part is? They write things down.
Oh, yeah,
I noticed everybody's writing it down like a classroom, you know? So it made it so, so cool, man.
That's very cool. Benji Molina with us, of course, Cardinals broadcaster, former big league player in his own right. Yachty's big brother, who I'm sure you probably taught Yachty some lessons, both good and bad, back in the day when you were kids.
hey, let me tell you, Missouri and Illinois, I am known as Yachty's brother. But you get away from those two states, people know me, man. People know me. I promise you.
You're the best, Ben. All right, so this time of year, man, we're 2 weeks away from opening day. 2 weeks from today, the Cardinals open against the Dodgers. What's this like for the guys getting ready? Where are they mentally with 2 weeks left? You've already been there for more than a month. What's this time like in spring training for the guys?
Well, this is the time that you start getting 3-4 at-bats. This is the time that you start playing 6 innings, 7 innings. Later on, it will become the whole full game. So, this is very, very important. And not only for the team, but think about this. All the players that are fighting for a spot, there's a lot of guys not having so much fun in spring. And there's other young guys that are having a lot of fun in the spring. And that's what the worry is about when you said about 2 weeks coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worry about all those guys. Like, okay, am I going to make the team? Okay, I'm not having the best spring, but the other guy is. So what's going to happen to me? And things like that. That's what these 2 weeks done. With the veterans, nothing bothered them. The veteran knows what is going to happen. They're going to take the pitchers are going to work on the changeup, on cutters, whatever they can. The batters are going to work on their swing to get it ready for the season. But the young guys, man, this Cardinal team, I don't know if you guys have paid attention, but, man, they have so many good young guys on mm-hmm. this team. And battling for a good spot on the team, they brought these guys in the bullpen, guys, that are legit, legit good. They're not starting. They're not starters. They're just relievers. And they have these young guys, Prieto, doing a great job. Kaepernick is doing great. Scott. It's knocking on the door, man. If Newbar's it's not healthy, watch out for Scott. He mm-hmm. might be the one. All these guys are having great spring, man, and that's really, really cool to know. And knowing the pitching, the young pitching, Zach, Palante's having a good one. Robertson, Thomas is opening eyes everywhere. McGreevy, Graceffo, they're all having great spring. Tink Hentz is having a good one. Mm-hmm. So. It's bright for the Cardinals, man.
So, Benji, you mentioned Newt Barr, and obviously we have Sonny Gray and Newt Barr and Tommy, who are all nursing some injuries right now. Let's assume for the moment that they were all healthy. Our lineup is completely healthy. How do you like this 2024 Cardinal team?
You know what? It all comes down to production for me, obviously, every year. It comes down to production. I think Tommy can do it. Obviously, we've seen him play over the years. Having a healthy Donovan help out a lot. We need Carson to step back up. Newbar to have another good year, if not better. We need everybody out there. I really do believe always that the bullpen wins our games. So if we have a good, healthy bullpen, it's going to be hard if we score 2, 3, maybe 4 runs in a game. It's going to be really hard to beat the Cardinals, man.
Benji Molina with us. Benji, thanks so much, buddy. I want to remind everybody, cardinals.com/theme. You can get your tickets for Baseball in the Classroom with Benji and Polo. So you get to learn a lot about the Spanish language terms for the game, the culture behind all of that. Just $15 for students. You get a ticket to that day's game against the Phillies. It's April 10th that game's coming up. And that $15 also includes a hot dog, chips, and a soda and all that. So you're not going to beat that deal. It's a good game with the Phillies. Learn some cool stuff from Benji and Polo. Good to catch up, Benj. We'll look forward to doing this again soon, buddy.
Thank you guys for having me. Let's go Cards, right? Let's do this.
You go, Benji Molina, here on KMOX.
Welcome back, guys. DJS on KMOX 220. Really cool. In studio, we have Russ Brandon, who is the president and CEO of the UFL. We have Coach Anthony Beck, who you guys met a few weeks ago. We really hit it off. Going to be doing a lot of stuff with the team this year. And Daryl Moose Johnston, who I'm most excited to meet. I grew up watching you. You're younger than me, but still, in my mind, top three fullbacks of all time and one of the best analysts now. So, pleasure to meet you. Yeah.
Very flattered.
Wheels, take it over.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the news today, man. I know it's breaking news that we're going to be hosting here in St. Louis the UFL's big event. Let's talk about the championship game.
Yeah, no, we're fired up. We came in today and celebrate 314 day with everybody here in St. Louis and thought, what better time than to reward this great community with the championship game, the first ever championship game of the UFL, which will take place on Saturday, June 16th at 4 o'clock.
It's awesome. You know, Coach, the reaction here to the Battle Hawks has been huge, right? I mean, some of that's been a little, middle finger to Stan Kroenke, but you guys earned, though, the people sticking around because you guys put good team out there. It's an entertaining product. I know you've had a chance. All three of you know the level of football that we're talking about here. How much do you think that plays into this privilege?
Hey, it's huge. I mean, St. Louis is a great city. You know, to be the head coach here, it's been humbling for me. And the fan base has been great. We talked about it last year, just showing up, being there, and we'll put the product on the field. But just really proud of how everybody's really embraced the team. And, we need more. I'm always greedy, right? I always want more. We got more seats open, more tickets available, which is great. We got a prime time national game, week two at home against Arlington. I mean, we can let the nation know what we're really about, which is awesome. So just really looking forward to start a season. Guys are working hard, getting ready, and it should be a great 2024.
Moose, put the analyst hat on for a second. What have you seen in your interactions with the UFL teams? Obviously, this combination is new, but the teams are not new. They've been around for a little bit, but now we have this kind of unified power. Just describe a little bit from your perspective.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, we went to season two last year. We saw more consistency from season one to season two. Mm-hmm. The XFL is going to experience that this year going into their second season. Yeah. When you talk about scheme and the different things from an X's and O's standpoint. But the biggest thing that happened with the course of the merger is 8 USFL teams and 8 XFL teams became 8 UFL teams. So the talent level across our rosters will be unmatched in spring football in any recent iteration that we've had. So we're talking about going all the way back to, the early 80s, when the USFL was trying to go head-to-head with the NFL and you had Steve Young and Reggie White, Mike Rozier, Herschel Walker. Not saying that we've got Hall of Famers in our rosters, but the depth across it, and Anthony can talk to you about how hard it was going from 75 to 58. I mean, in the past, that wouldn't have been too challenging for our coaches to get down to that next cut level. But there was talent across the board. Our players saw it. We're 58. We're going to cut to 50. You look around day one, and you're like, yeah, I feel all right. I think I'll be on the final 50. Well, they were out this year, and they're looking around. And they're like, well, that guy's good. That guy's good. Like, holy smokes. I'm gonna have to work. So I think the competition that came out of just the realization by everybody, you're going to have to bust your ass in training camp. And they're bigger. St. Louis is big. Michigan
I wonder
is
why
big.
They reflect the coach.
Washington is big. I mean, when we did onboarding, Russ and I talked about it. It was like legit guys walking in to do the onboarding, like real football players.
Russ, what can people look forward to for the championship game?
I think we're going to work closely with Mayor Jones and Kitty Radcliffe at Explore St. Louis. And we're very fortunate that we have a great team on the ground here. Brandon Williams oversees our business operations here, former Ram as well. They have a very good staff here. Our league staff are going to come in. We're going to talk about a ton of opportunities to engage the community, work with local vendors and local businesses to create a great atmosphere around the dome leading up to the championship game. But like I said earlier, what an opportunity for us to give back to this community, which gave us so much. We were talking about it earlier. Our first game last year was very frigid out. We were out for a run at 9 a.m. The game was at 3, and there were 7,000 people tailgating, legit tailgating at that time. And then to see 38,000 people come through the doors, it was pretty special. And obviously what Coach Becht has done and the product he's put out there, we look forward to replicating that again this year.
I mean, there's clearly a hunger for football here. We have college football programs not too far down the road in Columbia and Champaign, Illinois. It's not that you don't have any, but there's still a difference, right? I mean, professional is professional. You're older. You've seen more things. You've been through the college ranks already.
for our two former players here with Moose and Anthony, when you look at the players' generation now, do you think there are more players that are physically at that level than there were maybe 20, 25, 30 years ago just because of training techniques and the expansion of Division I college football and all that? Or is it probably about the same?
I'll let you go first.
Yeah.
I'm up of the old guy perspective. Yeah.
Am I generating? No. So, I mean, I think, listen, there's a lot of talented players out there that want a chance. This is a great space for those guys. I think in the past, you'd had a spring league, it'd be there for a year, and then the next year it's gone, and a new one starts up. Finally, you get something now with some more consistency, two straight seasons in the USFL, and now with the merger and us, XFL, another year. You know, the great thing about St. Louis is a lot of continuity with our players. You know, we're going to have a bunch of new players that we've gotten from other teams, but also we drafted, you know, young talent that didn't get drafted in the NFL. And again, they only have so many guys they can sign. So there is a deep pocket of players. Heck, I just cut, you know, we just talked about cuts 75 to 58, and we have to go to 50. But, you know, in my mind, those 75 guys were all starting caliber players for our league, and there's not a lot of space for them to really go anywhere else. So, again, there are a lot of talented players out there that just need a chance. And every year you see, I mean, just for us personally, we had 16 players go to NFL training camps. And, you know, we take a lot of pride in that. Yep. That's huge. Just trying to fill those little holes to help those guys take the next step. Staff that I have does a great job, and the players buy in. And if they do that, they got a really good chance. You got to win, too. I always sell, like, everybody wants their stats and their ball and catches and yards and all that stuff. But to me, if the team is good and the team wins, that draws the eyeballs. I get calls all the time from GM, scouts, head coaches, assistant coaches from the NFL all the time. Oh, love this. Watch the game. That's great. You know, if we're 1-5, nobody was probably watching that game for more than 10 minutes, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, we're great eyeballs. But if you can win consistently, it gives you a great chance.
Coach, a couple weeks away from the opener, give us some names to watch for, some of the players you really like.
Yeah, well, you know, clearly A.J. McCarron is back. It was a great story last year, arguably the best quarterback in the league. And he's really fired up, you know, to come back, and he's got a chip on his shoulder. Darius Shepherd, special teams player of the year, one of our top receivers. Hakeem Butler, you know, jumped on the scene. Everybody kind of forgot about him when he got his chance in the NFL, and he gets a chance in our league, and he became our best receiver in the league. We're able to bring in Jakari Pearson, who's nicked up right now, but he was statistically the best receiver in the league in Seattle, so really deep there. The entire offensive line is back, led by Jared Jones-Smith, our left tackle. Mike Panichuk, our center, is back for his second year. Steven Gonzalez. I mean, this is what's great for fans. They're going to – the fan recognition, you know, the guys coming back. And then we got the XFL Defensive Player of the Year last year, PETA T, I'll call him right now, on the edge, getting to the quarterbacks with Travis Feeney, Q Cole from Seattle. He's in our secondary. We revamped our secondary, and we got really big on the inside. You know, we didn't handle the run well against some of our premier run teams like DC, so we had to revamp the inside of our defensive line, and it's been really good competition and a lot of positive things going there. So, again, a lot of continuity, but a lot of new faces that can really help our team as well.
Well, congratulations. Continued success. Great to meet the two of you. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it, guys.
You got it.
Thank you so much.
235 DGS Wheels. Let's stick with sports. I don't know why this hit me so much, because coaches get fired all the time.
Yeah.
But Travis Ford from St. Louis University, and I grew up watching Travis Ford play.
Yep.
And it just, he's a grown man. He knows it's part of it.
Yep.
He knew it was coming. Hasn't had great success, but such a great guy, such a great player, seemingly a really passionate, dedicated coach, just doesn't work out, and then it's, you know, hit the bricks.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with everything you said. I love Coach Ford. He's been a lot of fun. Whenever I've dealt with him, he is super informative. He's super friendly. He's had some really good years here, but it comes down to the bottom line, and in 8 years, they made the tournament once. You know, that's what it's going to come down to for most people.
What do you think that is?
Well, a couple reasons. I mean, 1 year in particular, they lost their best player at the very beginning of the season, and that limited their ceiling. That was a couple years ago. And, you know, look, part of the problem is going to be keeping up with the name, image, and license, and paying, you know, being able to come up with deals for players. SLU is not a big university. It's not like Mizzou. It's not like Illinois.
And there are a lot of bigger schools that are that have been able to raise more money in that regard. Now, that's not to say that it's not happening with the Billikens. It is. And they're working towards doing it. But that makes it harder to get talent. And I'm not saying they don't have talent, but
yeah, they do.
You've got to be able to compete in the transfer portal. You've got to be able to compete at the high-end recruiting level if you're going to be a consistent tournament team.
What year is Jimerson in?
I feel like seventh year. No, he's been around for a while. No, I think he's senior, I think. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, it's not people that are they're going to be Billiken fans that are going to get really mad at me, but I don't think it's very easy to win there right now under the current circumstance. And that's not to say you can't. I'm just saying it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Travis Ford's record, it's not that different from Rick Majerus's record at SLU. It's a little worse now because this year was bad.
Yeah.
But overall, it really wasn't that different.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a place where, but here's the thing. What you're going to need to succeed at SLU is you're going to have to be able to make some hay, like maybe win a tournament game or two every handful of years or so.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be once every 8 years. It can't be just one and done, all of that. Because that's going to lead to change. It doesn't mean that the next person's going to be able to do it, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what way they go. Are they going to go for the Majerus model, which would be an established coach who's kind of not in coaching at the moment? A lot of people around town that are Billikens fans have been kind of wondering about Bruce Weber, the former Illinois coach, if he would be a candidate or not. When I'm reading about this from some of the national college basketball analysts, I haven't seen them mention his name. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen. But you're also either that or you're looking at an up-and-comer. You're looking at somebody that is an assistant coach on a big program looking for a head coaching spot. Or maybe another guy. There's another guy out there who was at Louisville and before that at Xavier and had a lot of success at Xavier in Chris Mack. But I don't know what the demand will be for him from other places. But it's going to be tough, man. It's a tough job.
So let's say that you took Bill Self from Kansas,
uh-huh,
and you made him the St. Louis University coach with this exact same team. How many more games does he win?
I don't know. That's a great question. Probably more, but I don't know. I mean, Bill Self's one of the best. But part of it, too, is like it's hard to grade how much of what Kansas is great at is tactics and strategy and things along those lines, or if it's talent. And what Bill Self can do at a blue blood school,
yeah,
is go out and get top talent. You're not going to get the Kansas guys at SLU. You might get the occasional big guy from St. Louis who wants to stay home and sees an opportunity, but it's not going to be very common. You know, I mean, the guys like Larry Hughes don't come along all the time that are NBA talents that are going to stay home and go.
Is Jimerson
and go there.
Jimerson NBA talent?
No. Maybe. I mean, not going to be a first-round draft pick. Maybe not a second-round draft pick. And you don't have to have that to succeed, but your margin for error at what I would call a mid-major is less, right? I mean, you have two things. So the mid-majors, and I don't know how this is going to change or if it's going to, but one thing that's changing in college sports, football and basketball are primarily what we focus on, but it's happening in all of them, it's happening in baseball, you name it, is there's a lot more player movement. So where mid-majors used to draw an advantage was roster stability. You know, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, they would get a lot of the one-and-done NBA guys, right? So their rosters are constantly changing year after year after year. But they could do it because they have elite talent. And where places like SLU and Creighton for years, yeah, and others, like the mid, and Creighton's bigger than a mid-major now, but like they came up that way. Those schools have always had the advantage of having guys that stay 3-4 years, and you build continuity and you have experience. But with the portal, guys are leaving. They're, you know, the guy that's great at a place that's not big, if he sees an opening at Georgia, he can now make the jump and go be their sixth man or be a starter.
Any downside to that other than to the team that gets left?
No, I mean, like, there's also opportunities, though, right? There are guys that go to those big schools that are bigger recruits but find themselves blocked, find themselves on the bench. You know, they're behind a guy that's better than them, and they're going to look for an opportunity to go somewhere and be the star. So you can maximize it. And I think that's, if I'm going to, you know, I don't follow SLU as closely as I follow the Cardinals or the Blues. So believe me, my analysis is not meant to be dead on. I've got the answers, but
That's those are the kind of guys that you're going to have to get. You're going to have to get the guys that decide that they're unhappy in the big schools and they want to come in and be a star somewhere.
Illinois is great. Let's talk Mizzou. As you know, Nick's a Mizzou kid. He loves Coach Gates. I love Coach Gates. As I understand it, we have one of the best classes coming in next year.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
A terrible year this year.
Yep.
He's in no danger, though, right?
No, no. It's only year two.
Yeah.
And year one was really an unexpected success. Like, year one was more not expected to be bad, like this year's been, but it was an unknown, and they were pretty good. So now, the goodwill of year one doesn't go away. The recruiting class that they have committed for next year, and I'm sure they'll work some things in the portal. The portal's been good to Mizzou. It's been good to Mizzou on the football side, too. You know, they've been adding quality players to what they already had, and Coach Drink did a nice job of straight-up recruiting, but they've also been great in the portal.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think Gates will have to continue being. But Mizzou's kind of in that sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
You're an SEC team. But you're not Kentucky, where you're getting 4-5 stars every year, or 3-5 stars and 2-1 and duns every year. So there are going to be opportunities for really quality players who want to come in and get more minutes at a place like Mizzou. So, you know, I think Gates is going to be fine. I'm not worried about this year.
What do you realistically expect from Illinois in the tournament?
I have no idea. This is something I love, but it makes it harder to fill out your tournament bracket when you get there. College basketball is so unpredictable,
which is what we love about it.
Yes. I mean, the tournament's always been to a degree, but you could still, forever, you could look at your bracket and be like, these are going to be three of the final four, or these will be five or six of the Elite Eight, right?
Duke, KU.
That is becoming way more difficult. There's just not that elite group of three or four or five in most years. The difference between the top five teams and the number 15, 16 team is very small, in part because the talent gets spread out more, right? It used to conglomerate with the big schools, mm-hmm. and now that's not happening with the portal and everything else. The talent is spreading out, so it's becoming more difficult. But, I mean, Illinois is capable of doing damage in the tournament. They're a team that, you know, the expectation should be at least a couple of wins in the tournament, at least. And then from there, hopefully you can make that magical run.
Yeah. You know what I love? I love guys in the NBA who I'd never heard of. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Just some guy, and you're like, I have no idea where this guy played college. He certainly wasn't a star wherever he was.
Right.
It's interesting how the NBA scouts can pick people out who were not stars at major colleges and turn them into NBA players.
Yeah, and see, a lot of scouting and a lot of watching college basketball, you know, it's not always about the guys that put up the biggest numbers, because sometimes, again, it's just opportunity and where you are and what system you're running. And, you know, like Michael Jordan, if you looked at his stats in college, you would have been like, that's it. But it was because of his coach. Dean Smith spread the ball around. He didn't let Mike just run and score 30 points a game. He was more about the team structure, Dean Smith was. And then you see him in the NBA, and it's like one of the greatest scorers of all time, because, and people knew that he was going to be great, right? There's a reason he was picked as high as he was. He was the number three pick. Should have been number one, but he was the number three pick. And a lot of it depends on those types of circumstances. Yeah. And look, the game in the NBA now, too, there are a lot more international guys, yeah. A lot more players you've never heard of or never seen, unless you're like hardcore. Like, if you're a hardcore basketball fan, you know who all those guys are.
You see Wimby get dunked on
him? Dude, yeah. Did you see the crazy dunk he did the other day?
No.
I mean, so he's just dribbling along the baseline, doesn't use two hands, just off the dribble, palms the ball and dunks it. Like, his hands are so big, he doesn't need to do anything to just set it. He's just like off the dribble, palm it, dunk it, boom. His wingspan is insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
251 DGS Stairway coming up. We have Holly Thompson Rader, friend of the show, coming up, a state rep. You know, I hate to even say this, but apropos of the recent beatings and stabbings and all this stuff, and I heard some local politicians talking and saying, we need to invest in conflict resolution classes, and we need to teach these kids how to de-escalate and how to solve their problems. I've never been a big believer in that. You know, high school kids are high school kids. Junior high kids are junior high kids. Look, try it. By all means, throw everything you can at the problem. But I remember one time going, Nick went to this camp, and I got there, and on the final day, they were teaching them all conflict resolution, and they were probably in sixth grade, and they were practicing saying things like, when you say that I'm a wussy, you make me feel bad about myself. I would appreciate it, and I wanted to step up and go, like, you're going to get your ass kicked if you say things like that. You feel me?
It doesn't work.
I don't know what the
at that
answer
level
is, but...
Well, I think there it can be part of the answer, right? But that's got to be at a much younger age. Like, you have to get them when they're really young, and because by the time you're in that position, especially when there is an aggressor, if someone's being hyper-aggressive and there's a bully, just use that as an, there's a bully. If a kid says to the bully, you know, that really makes me feel bad, the kid's going to say, great, I'm going to do it more. You know, the hardest part, now, again, when normal kids are having a fight, like an argument or a shoving match, that's a different thing than an angry kid being involved or kids that don't care about authority. I don't know how you fix that part because so much of it is dependent upon how you're brought up. And it doesn't mean where you're brought up, how you're brought up.
Yeah.
Some people are brought up and their dad's like, you know what? If that kid pushes you, punch him in the face. And there are other kids that don't have anybody telling them anything and they have to learn on their own from whatever they see. Every situation, every family raising is different. And until you can find continuity there, you can start in grade school, kindergarten, first grade, with the ideas that you don't need to fight. Here's how we can resolve these things and move forward. By the time you're in sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, if you're telling a kid to say that to someone who's bullying them, it's not going to work. And I'm only saying that based on of what I've seen my entire life.
Well, and why does the responsibility have to be on the kid who's being bullied?
Right.
Like, that's not fair. The problem is the person who's going to take it far enough to where they're smacking another child's head on the pavement until they're seizing. The problem is with the person who brings a knife and stabs another person.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't be on the person who's being attacked to de-escalate.
I agree.
I mean, it was really interesting yesterday talking about it, you know, just listening during the think tank. And Karen and Steve both brought up the fact, like, what do you have to have witnessed at home in order for that to be an okay?
To even have that in your head.
Yeah. Like, why is that in your toolbox? And that does seem like something that's kind of impossible to sort out. But I don't know. I think it's very similar to like the school shooter problem. I don't know how we reach these people before they get to that point, but we have to do everything in our power to try.
But remember when they're talking about actual criminals and murderers in St. Louis a couple years ago, and they were saying that there are only like 100 or 200 of them.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And we need to get to them, and we need to convince them to stop being like that. I think it's probably the same way in schools. I don't think that every kid there is looking to...
No, most are not. Most are not.
If I were in charge, I would have such... And sometimes I would get it wrong, but I would err on the side of yanking those kids out of school. That's your problem. That's your parents' problem. I'm sorry. I don't want to throw any kids on the trash bin, but I would rather 99% of the kids be able to go to school and feel safe or walk home and feel safe and get rid of the kids who are the real problems.
Yeah, and I don't know. If we had a solution for bullying, which is it's not at the root of every conflict, but it's part of a lot of them. If you had a solution for that, we would have done it already. The problem is everything has multiple layers, and a lot of it's at home. And how do you police what's happening at home?